Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Bet Amud Bet by the two dots. The Gemara here is going to discuss the last Shita in the Mishnah. The last Shita in the Mishnah was a Shita of Rabbi Elazar. We had Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, and then the last Shita in the Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says that when it comes to Yayin, Shemen, and items like that, that are Re'uim Lemizbeach, you sell them off, and then you bring with the proceeds an Olah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Abahu b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. So Rabbi Abahu is a third generation Amora. Shimon Lakish is a second generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. Taimo de Rabbi Elazar. The reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah is, now I'm going to make a little point over here because it will save us hours later on, which is that the Ifei Naim changes the girsa here to read Rabbi Abahu b'shem Rabbi Yochanan. And it's in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And that is because the sugya later on asks a question, astira in Rabbi Yochanan. Problem is that you can't find the other memra of Rabbi Yochanan. And so therefore everybody's doing acrobatics to find Rabbi Yochanan. With the Yefei Naim's mendation here between Rabbi Shimon Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, then it changes the whole sugya and makes it much more plausible, understandable, and it'll make it much easier for us to flow. So I'll note it over here so that when we get there, we'll know that it is. So he has it as being Rabbi Bahu b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, that time of the Rabbi Lazar. Pasuk says, Daber el Aron ve'el Banav. So this is the pasuk that we quoted yesterday for the explanation within the Shita of Rabbi Yoshua as well, which is Daber el Aron ve'el Banav, ve'el b'nei Yisrael, v'amar talem, ish, mi beit Yisrael, min ager b'Yisrael, asher yakriv korbano l'chol nidrehem, u'l'chol nidvotam, asher yakrivu l'Hashem le'ola. So he uses that pasuk as the source, which is, hakol karev ola. Everything gets brought as an ola. That is, l'chol nidrehem, u'l'chol nidvotam. Everything is made into an ola. How do you do that? You monetize whatever you've brought, and then you make it into a law. Then the subsequent pasuk, which we also saw yesterday, says, Lirtzonchem tamim zachar, babakar, baksavim, ubaizim. So yesterday, Rabbi Yeshua darshan the word bakar to teach you not only zacharim, but also nikevot. That's what we left off with yesterday. Here he says, Lirtzonchem tamim zachar, that you bring with that a korban ola, yachol afilo ofot. You would think that this is true of birds. Tamadomar babakar velo beofot. That it applies to a bakar does not apply to ofot. It only applies to animals. It does not apply to birds. And therefore, ofot do not gain the status of being placed on the mizbeach directly, as opposed to animals or zacharim that would end up on the mizbeach directly. And that's why he says, yenot, shmanim, and ofot, you sell them, and with the proceeds you bring an ola. Technically, with the birds, you could have put they themselves on the mizbeach as an ola. He rejects that understanding based on the subsequent pasuk, which says, which items are brought directly as an ola? That is, etzonchem, tamim zachar, babakar. Only things that are animals go on the mizbeach directly as olot. Ofot do not go on the mizbeach directly as olot. That is the explanation of this position of Rabbi Elazar. Then we have Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Abon Bar Chia, Rabbi Yirmiyah, third, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. And then along with Rabbi Abon Bar Chia, who was a third generation Amora, Rabbi Yativun Ve'amrin. They were sitting together and said this over, we're discussing this issue. Tamana Mar Rabbi Yochanan, over there Rabbi Yochanan said, Taima de Rabbi Shimon. The reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon, Shekei Nikiva Shiba'ov Kshira Lavo Oda. Before we saw that there was a machloke with regards to kedushat aguf by nekeva. You bring a nekeva for an ola, a sham, or a pesach, all of which only come from zacharim. What is the status of that nekeva? The Tanakhama had a position that they all attain kedushat aguf. The nekeva gets full kedushat aguf, and you can make tmura out of that nekeva. We had Rabbi Shimon's position, which was by ola, it attains kedushat aguf. By the others, it does not attain kedushat aguf. And then we have the third opinion, which is Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, who says nothing attains kedushat aguf. So Rabbi Yochanan, earlier in this amud, explained the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Why does Rabbi Shimon say that an ola attains kedushat aguf, and the other items did not attain kedushat aguf? The answer was, is because ola has a manifestation of nekeva. And ola does come as a nekeva in birds. So because of that, it can attain kedushat aguf. A Pesach and an Asham never come as a Nekeva. There are no exceptions. There is no time where you have a Nekeva in those Karbanot. Based on that, he says, that's why Rabbi Shimon believes then any keva can attain kedushat haguf by an olah. So that's one statement of Rabbi Yochanan. So that's Taman over there. Veka tamit hocha amar hechin. He said this. So this is where everybody is trying to figure out, what do you mean over here he said this? We didn't see anything for Rabbi Yochanan over here. So that's why the Yafei and Naim's emendation makes a big difference, because then this previous statement was made by Rabbi Yochanan, and now you understand the steer in Rabbi Yochanan. This previous statement says, Babakar comes to exclude Ofot, and says Ofot do not attain Kedushat HaGuf. So why over here does he say, Ofot do not attain Kedushat HaGuf? Yet, in the explanation of Rabbi Shimon, he says Ofot do attain Kedushat HaGuf. It seems to be a stira within that position of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, because of the placement of the statement, as well as the reference to two statements of Rabbi Yochanan, it makes a lot of sense to make the emendation that the Yafei and Naimi made, because then it makes sense. If you don't, then the previous statement is not made by Rabbi Yochanan. And number two is, then why is this question placed over here if you're asking within the context of Rabbi Yochanan? So that's why it helps the flow of the Gemara and makes more sense if you make that emendation. Now, Amar Rabbi Yosei Kiyamtia Keha Damar Rabbi Shmuel B'Shem Rabbi Zura. So Rabbi Yosei, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, says, I can explain this based on what? Rabbi Shmuel B'Shem Rabbi Zura. Shmuel is a fourth generation Amora as well. The name of Rabbi Zura, Rabbi Zeruel, third generation Amora. Kol She'ena Yochola Likarev Lohi V'lo Tamea. Anything in which it itself cannot get onto the Mizbeach, and neither can its value or its money get onto the Mizbeach. Lo kachah l'kedushat damim or hektesh damim. Then it only attains kedushat damim. So if this object or animal cannot get onto the Mizbeach, and even if it had a mum in it, you could not redeem it, it's not redeemable, then when you're makdish it up front, it only attains kedushat damim, it does not attain kedushat aguf. Va'at amart, if you wipe out the word, which probably doesn't belong here, va'at, say instead, va'amart, I said ye'ut. That makes a lot of sense. Lakrivo, ein ata yechol. Put it on the mizbeach, you can't do this. Now when he says this makes a lot of sense, he's speaking about Rabbi Yochanan's position with regards to Oph over here in Rabbi Lazar's position. Why does Bakar come to exclude Oph? Let me explain to you why his position makes a lot of sense here, vis-a-vis his position by Rabbi Shimon and Olah. That's because the circumstances are different. And that's what he's saying here. Amar Teut makes a lot of sense now. Based on what I just quoted you, now I can give you an explanation, which is, Lakrivo ein ata yechol. To put on the Mizbeach, you cannot put it on the Mizbeach. Tadim babakar v'lo b'ofot. You have an exclusion from the Pasuk, which does not allow the Oph to get onto the Mizbeach. Liftoto ein ata yechol. To redeem it, you can't redeem it. Shein the Oph pidyon. The Oph itself has no pidyon. Pidyon only applies to behemot. An oaf that has a mum in it, it has no pidyon. Generally, an oaf, even with a mum in it, is allowed to go on the mizbech. That's a mechusar eiver, in order not to go on the mizbech. But even if it's mechusar eiver, it has no pidyon. You cannot redeem ofot. So that gets me back to this statement that we just brought from Rabbi Shmuel, B'Shem Rabbi Zera, which is, when you can't put it itself on the mizbech, and you can't redeem it, then what is the din? It only attains kedushat damim. So the fumkein. So because that's Tzarech Meimar, Lokitcha, Kedushat Damim. That's why in this instant, the Ofot only reach a level of Kedushat Damim, and not Kedushat Mizbeach. Whereas, in the case by Rabbi Shimon, by the Nekeva, when you brought the Nekeva over there, that can attain Kedushat Mizbeach, because Nekeva, first of all, is Ra'ui L'Korban B'Makom Acher, that's number one. Number two is, it's redeemable. A behema, nekeva, does have the ability, when it gets in a moment, to be redeemed, unlike an oaf. Because of that, it attains kedushat haguf, kedushat hamizbeach. And that's the difference. Rabbi Yochanan's position, in a sense, is consistent. We're dealing with different issues. His position is, yes, you can attain kedushat haguf by ofot, and you can attain kedushat haguf when you have the wrong korban. But that's only assuming that you qualify with these two things. Number one is, it can go on the mizbeach. Or number two is, you could redeem it. Oph, in our case over here, fails on both of those, because Bakar precludes the Oph itself from going on the Mizbeach, and redemption is out of the question. So therefore, no Kedushat HaGuf. Oph by itself can get on the Mizbeach, because it can attain Kedushat HaMizbeach, and you can have Big Matishik Kedushat HaGuf, because it can go on the Mizbeach. Nikeva, even though it's not qualified for this Korban, and therefore it can't go on the Mizbeach as it is, therefore it should not attain Kedushat HaMizbeach, but it has the other side, which is Pidyon. The ability redeemed, therefore it can attain Kedushat Mizbeach if it has a parallel within the context, which in this case, the Nekeva and Ola has the bird, which is a Nekeva. And that will explain the difference in the position of Rabbi Yochanan with regards to his explanation of Rabbi Shimon versus his explanation of Rabbi Elazar. All right, now we have Haraya b'shem Rabbi Yochanan. The group in the Beit Midrash, his friends, said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And others have it in this way, which is Rabbi Aibo Barnagre, who was a third, fourth generation Amora. Amar Kumi Rabbi Elah, who said it before Rabbi Eli, third generation Amora. B'shem Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, second generation Amora. So either way, it's coming from Rabbi Yochanan. It's a question of how the Mesorah came from Rabbi Yochanan. Taima dehin tanyo. Let me explain to you this Braita. The position here is coming to explain Rabbi Shimon b'Rabbi Yehuda, who explains Rabbi Shimon as to why that when you have an Ikeva by an Olah, an Asham, and a Pesach, does not attain Dushat Mizbeach. So now this is Rabbi Yochanan coming to explain that position. So far we have had Rabbi Yochanan explain the position of Rabbi Shimon by himself. Now he's coming to explain the position of Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda, that is the name of Rabbi Shimon, based on this Braita. Maybe it's explained the reason of the Mishnah, or Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda's position in the Mishnah, which is v'im kol behemat me'ah asher lo yakrivu mimenu korban la'Hashem. This is found in the area of Tmura. The pasuk beforehand describes the dinim of Tmura. The subsequent pasuk in the Sefer Vayikra is v'im kol behemat me'ah asher lo yakrivu mimenu korban la'Hashem v'emidet ha'behemah lifnei ha'kohen. So you put it before the kohen. The subsequent pasuk, which will become important also, is so here, if you bring something that obviously is disqualified from the Mizbeach, then you assess the value of it, and then the value will be given to Hashem. What is this Behemat Me'ah, number one? And number two is, the Pasuk itself has too many words in it. It's excessive in its explanation, because it says, Behemat Me'ah, Asher lo yakrivu mimenu korban. So one of those two words is unnecessary. Either Tmeya is unnecessary because it's Tmeya. Obviously, it's Lo Yakribu Mimenu Korban LaHashem. Obviously, a Tmeya cannot be brought as a Korban. Or the other way around. If you say it's something that's not Mukrab as a Korban LaHashem, then Tmeya obviously is included in that category. So something here is extraneous or excessive in the wording of the Pasuk. So that's what it said here. In Kol Behemat Tmeya, Shel Yakribu Mimenu Korban LaHashem, Matal Madomar Tmeya. Why does the Pasuk mention the word Tmeya? Ella, Afilu Tmeya Boto Hashem. Even if it's Tmeya within that same category. So here, that's exactly what the position of Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda is that a Nekeva doesn't qualify to get Kedushat HaGuf. Even though within that category, Nekeva does have a manifestation. For instance, by Olah, where the bird, the Nekeva does have a manifestation. Despite that fact, Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda says, no Tmura, no Kedushat HaGuf. What is he basing it on? He's basing it on this pasuk that says a behemat tmeya never attains kedushat haguf. It's only good for its damim, for its value. V'kasha b'da. On that, we had a question. Tiv, the pasuk, the subsequent pasuk, which I just read to you before, says v'emid v'erich hamada v'aracha. Hamada v'aracha is the process by which the kohen assesses the value of the object, and then, based on that assessment, tell him how much he's got to pay to redeem the animal, and then have the money to be kodesh. Hamada v'aracha only apply to objects that have kedushat haguf or kedushat mizbeach. Hamada v'aracha is not necessary for things that have kedushat damim, because they're made for their monetizer. There's a different process. Then you have to bring it in front of an assessment council that it consists of a certain number of people and a kohen, so on and so forth. But kedushat damim has a different din than this din of Hamada v'aracha. Hamada v'aracha is a particular din with items that attain kedushat haguf. So they reject Rabbi Yochanan's explanation in Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda because of the subsequent pasuk which says v'amid v'erich. If you have to be do Hamada and aracha, that indicates that whatever we were talking about before did have kedushat haguf. So if it did have kedushat haguf, then that doesn't solve your problem here. That explanation Rabbi Shimon by Yehuda is not going to work here, because the tmeya obviously cannot be something that's kedushat damim. It must be something that is kedushat haguf. So therefore, Rabbi Zeira b'shem Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Zeira is a third generation, or Zeura was a third generation Amora. B'shem Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the second generation Amora. Lo amar kein. He did not explain it the way that Rabbi Yochanan explained it. Right, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is a peer of Rabbi Yochanan's, and they argue many times. Here, Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the pasuk is rejected by Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. Rabbi Yochanan used it as the explanation for Rabbi Shimon bar Yehuda and the name Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Instead, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat uses it as an explanation for the Tanakama in the Braita before. The Tanakama says that a Nekeva does attain Kedushat HaGuf across the board. That's Olah, Asham, and by Pesach. Ela, Vim kol behemat me'ah, Asher lo yakrivu mimenu karbanu Hashem. Kol she'enu ra'ui likarev. Lo kan v'lo makom acher. So he says, what is the Tmeyah? And then you have the excessive words of Asher lo yakrivu mimenu karbanu Hashem. So that Asher lo yakrivu mimenu karbanu Hashem is extraneous. So what does he do? He says that comes to define for you what Tmeyah is in the Pasuk. Tmeyah is something that can never be brought as a karban Hashem. Well, kol she'enu ra'ui likarev lo kan v'lo makom acher. If it's never qualified to be a korban, then Eino said Tmura. Then it doesn't make Tmura. Yatzat Nekeva, over here they added in Ba'of, which probably just drawn over from the other place, but really, Yatzat Nekeva Le'ola. Case of Nekeva, which goes for an Ola, or Nekeva in other places, which does have manifestation. Which is really that Nekeva does in Shlamim have manifestation. We have Korbanot, where Nekeva is a valid Korban. And so therefore, it will attain Kedushat HaGuf, even though in this particular Korban, it does not qualify. Nevertheless, because of the way the Pasuk is worded, it's not disqualified, and it will attain Kedushat HaGuf. So that's the explanation of Rav Elazar ben Pedat, and that's the explanation for the Tanakama. Tanakama says it does reach through the Kedushat HaGuf. Now, we have Rabbi Bone, V'Rabbi Bone. Problem is, in the Girsa here, he added in an Aleph, try to distinguish between Rabbi Bone, because otherwise it would be Rabbi Bone, B'Shem Rabbi Bone, and that would be difficult. It's also difficult to say that it was Rabbi Bone, Bar Rabbi Bone, and that he was the son of Rabbi Bone, because that would make this Rabbi Bone the fifth generation Amora, and then Bone Kamei Rabbi Zura, and they were speaking in front of Rabbi Zura as a third generation Amora, which put them too far away. How would you have a fifth generation Amora speaking to a third generation Amora? It's likely here that it was either a doubling of the name by accident, or you can see here in the Nusach HaBavli that he calls it Ravin v'Rabbi Bone, so that he adds on a different Amora in order to solve that problem. It's more likely that it's Ravin and Rabbi Bone, Kumei Rabbi Zura. They had this question, posed this question, Rabbi Zura, which comes to undermine the way that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat explained that pasuk in order to be a support for the Tanakama's position, which is Harei Haroveya vanirba. Roveya and nirba are psulot in terms of a korban. These are animals that were involved in bestiality, whether it was a male or a female. Sheinan ruin likarev lokan velo makom acher. They have no ability to put on the mizbeach. They are completely disqualified from ending up on the mizbeach. Varein osin tmura. And the Tosefta tells us they do attain pshat haguf. So here's an example of something that attains Kedushat HaGuf, despite the fact that it has no manifestation whatsoever in a Korban. It can never be brought as a Korban. Yet, it attains Kedushat HaGuf. That would undermine your explanation, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, of that Pasuk, to say that when do you attain Kedushat HaGuf? When you have some manifestation within Korbanot. You have no manifestation, no Kedushat HaGuf. Here we have something with no manifestation, and yet it's attaining Kedushat HaGuf. Amar Lon, Af Ani Lo Amarti, Ella Tmea Mamash. Probably not the right girsa, but rather Tmea Mimum. That's probably the right girsa, which is what's in the Bavli as well. That makes more sense over here. So Rabbi Zeura is the one who quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. So that they came to Rabbi Zeura and questioned his drusha that he brought in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. So they have a serious question and a good question. So Rabbi Zeura's answer is, when you're talking about Tmeyah over here, which is the way that the Bavli interprets it, the Bavli says that Tmeyah over here means Balat Mum. So that's what Tmeyah is here. So he says, that's what I meant. I meant only within Balat Mum is that true. That a Balat Mum, where the Mum preceded the Hakdasha, so that's what I meant by Tmeyah over here. So then they say back to him, V'kasha bidah, we still have a problem with that, because K'tiv v'hemid v'herich. The problem with saying that it's something that had a mum first, and then had its kedushah devolve upon it afterwards, that type of animal does not require hamada v'aracha. So if that's what the pasuk is speaking about, that this behemah tmeah here is referring to something that has a mum in it, and then you were makdish it, and that's why it's disqualified from the mizbeach, then if it's disqualified from the mizbeach, why is it that you require hamada v'aracha? Hamada v'aracha is only applicable for something that attains kedushat haguf. So therefore, that doesn't make sense. What you're saying here is incorrect. Because the Hamad Aracha says that it's talking about something that can attain Kedushat HaGuf. The fact that you're suggesting over here, we're talking about something that has a mum and then was Mukdash and does not attain Kedushat HaGuf, doesn't make sense. Because if that's the definition of Tmeyah, then Hamad Aracha is not necessary. And so based on that, that leaves it as a very difficult explanation. Because what Rav Zeura tried to do to get out of the problem of the Roveya Nirba is to say that the Tmeyah over here, the disqualified Korban, is something that has a mum in it. Has a mum in it because it's not really anywhere else. And therefore it's disqualified completely. So you're right about that point. It's disqualified completely because it doesn't have a mum, and therefore it doesn't attain Kedushat HaGuf. But it doesn't attain Kedushat HaGuf, then what's the Amodah and Rocha necessary afterwards? And therefore that can't be the explanation here of that, and the Gemara leaves it unresolved here. How to resolve either Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat's explanation of the Pasuk to support the Tanna Kamma, or Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the Pasuk to explain Rabbi Shimon bar Yehuda. They both have the same problem in the end, which is this problem of the subsequent Pasuk, which is Hamad of Arocha, that says that it does have Kedushat HaGuf, and they're giving you explanations of Tumah that does not have Kedushat HaGuf. And so because of that, we leave it as unresolved as a question. The next Mishnah we've already referenced, referred to, quoted beforehand, and therefore there's really no Gemara on this Mishnah, a Mishnah that gives you the explanation of things that we already have noted, which is Achad David Yom Misharin et Alishka. Every 30 days they put out the Lishka to bid. They had an RFP every 30 days. Others explain Achad L'Shoshim Yom Misharin et Alishka is that they reset the price, meaning that the suppliers were fixed, but they go to market to reset the price every 30 days. And they check the price against the contracted price to determine whether they're paying market or they're paying the contracted price. Kol ha-mekabel alav, the sapek siltot. So anybody who agrees to be the supplier of solot, of the flour. So they did it for flour, for oil, for wine. They went out with a bid process every 30 days. If he agreed to supply it mi-arba, he said, I'm going to bring you arba for sa'ah, for salah. Amdu mi-shalosh. And then the price went up, so that you're only getting 3 sa'ah per selah. Isapeg mi dalet. He still has to supply it at dalet. Again, this is what we spoke about before, which is that the Mikdash Beli Sili gets a call option over here, and that if the price goes up, they can exercise that and buy at the price that they agreed to. On the other hand, Mishalosh, if they agreed to buy at 3 sa'ah per selah, but do mi dalet, and the price went down, it depreciated, and now you get 4 sa'ah per selah, Sapek Midalit. They get to buy at the 4. So they don't exercise the call option and they buy at the cheaper price because Shiad Hakdesh al Elyona. Shiad Hakdesh is always as the upper hand. They always get the better deal over here, which means that they get the better of the contracted price or the market price. Whichever is better, that's what they buy at. Right, exactly. You know how they put Olympic sponsor on it. So yeah, here we are, you temple supplier. So there is value to it, even if they didn't make a margin on it. I think they have an determining volumes also. It gives them a larger amount of volume. There's probably value to it. Now, the other thing is that they have to guarantee their product. They have to warranty their product. So not only do they have to supply at the better price, they have to warranty their product until it's utilized, which is, imit lia solet. If the solet goes bad, meaning it gets worms in it, then it's lia lo. Then it's the supplier's problem. V'michmitz yayin. If the wine ferments goes bad, hechmitz lo. It's his problem. Einu mekabel me'otav ad sheyeh mizbeach merutzeh. That means he doesn't get his money until the mizbeach is happy. So that he has to basically warranty the product that he delivers, that it's of quality, that even if they don't use it the first day, if they use it 30 days later, it's still going to be at the same level of quality. So number one is they get the lower of the market and contracted price, plus they get a warranty on the product that the product's going to be whole until they utilize it for the mizbeach. So now, Tani B'Shem Rabbi Shimon. So this also we quoted earlier in the Masechta, which is Rabbi Shimon says, Miyada yu mekablim et ma'otehem. They used to pay the suppliers immediately. Rakonim zrizimhem. Because Rakonim used to use everything right away. But as it was delivered, they were getting it going and using it on the Mizbeach. So there really wasn't any chance for anything to go bad because almost immediately it ended up on the Mizbeach. It was fresh. That means even though it seems like they had contracted on a 30-day supply, it was delivered daily. And so as they delivered it, they utilized it, and therefore Rabbi Shimon says they got paid because we assume whatever was brought was on the Mizbeach shortly after, and if it came as a good quality, then it was going to be good quality by the time it got on the Mizbeach because there wasn't any tarrying or any delay or holdovers. And so because of that, they paid them immediately. So that's the braita that adds in that Rabbi Shimon argues on this position about delaying the payment until we were certain that the supply was used. He says that the assumption was the supply was used and therefore you could pay them up front. Now we begin with the next perek. Elohein ha-mimunim shayu b'migdash. These are the individuals who were appointed to work in the Migdash. The Gemara will discuss what exactly their status is or who are these individuals that are found within this Mishnah. Yochanan ben Pinchas ala chotamot. Yochanan ben Pinchas dealt with the chotamot. The chotamot were basically tickets that used to buy You used to go in there and say, I needed a certain korban. So you go in there and you pay him, and he hands you a ticket that says that korban on it, what you needed. Then you go to the people who are supplying the korbanot, which tickets to him, and he supplies to you that you have on your ticket. So you purchase the ticket from the person in one place, and then you go to the person supplying, and you hand him the ticket, and then he gives you the korban. At the end of the day, they used to reconcile between them. The person who was selling the korbanot and the person who sold the tickets used to come back, and they'd reconcile the money against the tickets. Tickets that he took in versus the money that was expended, so they would have an accounting reconciliation as to whether the right amount of korbanot were given out per the money that was paid. Achya al-Nisachim, he was in charge of the Nisachim. Matya ben Shmuel alapaisot, he dealt with the lotteries. Goanim used to have to, over the day or every day, had to go through a process of a lottery in which they got to decide who was going to do the avoda on that day. So those paisot were run by him. Tachya alakinin, Tachya took care of the kinim, which are the birds.
And obviously, someone who worked with the kinim had to be very bright. As we know from the Mishnah Avot, kinim upitchei nida hein hein gufei halachot. And in addition to that, we know from a second kinim the complexity that can come up with issues of kinim.
Tachya zeu Mordechai. The Mishnah says that Tachya is really Mordechai. Mordechai from Megillat Esther. V'lami yikra shmo Tachya. So why is his name Tachya? Sheyaputeach dvarim v'dorshan. He used to open up items and be doresh them, yodea b'shivim lashon, and he knew 70 languages. There the Mishnah says that it's really Mordechai, and his nickname was Ptachya because of his ability to open up items that were difficult and to explain them, as well as his understanding of 70 languages. Ben Achya al Cholei Me'ayim, he used to be in charge of the stomach ailments in the Mikdash. The Gemara will explain this in later in today's daf. The Kohanim suffered from the stomach ailments, and that is because the Kohanim ate a lot of meat and drank a lot of water, and that was most of their diet based on being in the Mikdash. And that led to stomach ailments, which they need to deal with. The Chunya Chofer Shichin. The Chunya was the one who dug borot, cisterns, or water wells, or springs. He was a person whose job was to dig. He came with the drill, the big drill, and dug in. Gvine, crows. Gvine was in charge of calling out in the morning. He was the clapper, as is known in Europe. Over here, he was one with a strong voice that used to wake them up in the morning and used to say, is it time to start the avodah on the Mikdash? Ben Gever, on the Ilat Sharim, Ben Gever was in charge of the gates and closing the gates and opening the gates. Ben Bavai, Mumunei al Pkia, which is mentioned in the Gemara and Sukkah as well, which is someone who took care of the Ptilot, the wicks for the menorot, that they used to make them out of Pekat Semer or Pishtan. And the Mishnah Zuka talks about, with regards to Simrat Ve'edot Sho'eva, that they used to take the balai, they worn out, big day kuhuna, and use them for the wicks. Benazah ala Tzlautzau. Tzlautzau was a symbol, so he was in charge of the instruments. You can see that in the Karban Eidah. Klei Shir Sheyesh Lo Kol Gadol Lashon Titzlena Oznav. Symbolo, the symbols. Hugras ben Levi ala Shir. Hugras ben Levi dealt with the Shir. Because before, so he was in charge of the instruments. But here, when we're talking about the shir, we're talking about the choir aspect of it. Beit Garmo amaseh lechem apanim, this we've already seen, the Beit Garmo were in charge of the lechem apanim, that's found in Mishneot and Yoma as well. Beit Avtinas amaseh ha'ktoret, over there, Beit Avtinas as well is found in Mishneot and Yoma as being in charge of the toret. Ve'elazar la prochet, Elazar took care of the parochot. U'pinchas amalbish, and Pinchas took care of the clothing of the kohanim. So then, David's question. What is going on in this Mishnah? Are these people all contemporaries of Mordechai? What's going on in the Mishnah? And that's a machloket here. Rabbi Chizkiya, Amar Rabbi Simon. Simon is, as we know in the Yushami, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Rabbi Chizkiya is a fourth generation Amora, quoting in the name of Rabbi Shimon Pazi, a third generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. V'Rabbonon. And the other side is the Rabbonon. Chadamar, Ksherei Dor Vador Bali Manot Alehen. Over here, the Mishnah is enumerating the best people in each of these functions. They are not contemporaries, they are not peers. They pick the best person who took care of this position. And that's Ksherei Dor Vador. Each particular person who was Kasher and did a great job at this, that's what's listed in our Mishnah. Across the generations, these were the people that stood out in these positions. They were the best at these positions all through the generations. That's one. V'charan Amar, and the other one says, Mishaya Boto Dor Mana Mashabidoro. The Tana, whatever generation this Tana is found in, he looked into the Mikdash and he listed all the people that were doing the jobs in the Mikdash. They were peers, they were contemporaries. We're not making any comment as to whether they were good or bad. It just happens to be that when the Tana, when this Mishnah was put together, these were the people serving at that time. Right now, Gemara in Yoma deals with this issue, which is the Gemara in Yoma discusses about the Mishnayot that list people there as well. And the Gemara in Yoma wants to know in the Mishnayot, when the Mishnah lists them, are these people good or are these people bad? Now, what of the people that are left in between are these Beit Garmo and Beit Aptinos? Right, the Gemara has some questions about those individuals, about Beit Aptinos and Beit Garmo, because those families were excellent at Lechem Apanim and excellent at the Torah, but they also would not disclose the information to other people. So there's a question as to why they did not disclose it to other people. Was it the Shvach or was it a Gnai? They didn't disclose it because it would be misused, and therefore they didn't want to disclose it to other people. Or they didn't disclose it because they basically wanted to keep a monopoly on this, and that's why they did not disclose it. And that will make a difference as to how you view what is said in those Mishnayot and Yoma, as well as it will influence over here. The way that you read this Mishnah will also have impact on that Machloket in Yoma. Because if you believe that it's mentioning over here Ksherei Dor Vador, mentioning the Ksherim of all the generations, then the list includes Beit Aptinos and Beit Garmo, which would include them Lishvach. That would be that they would be positive over here. On the other hand, if you say that Tana is just listing over here those that were found in his generation, then it could be that it was the Gnai, because here it's not opining on the Kashrut of these individuals, simply telling you information about in his time. This is who served in these positions.
In Yoma, wasn't there a couple of other names?
The question is, where's the line? The Mishnayot lists people that are the Shvach and people that are Gnai in Mishnayot and Yoma. And the question is, where does that stop? Where does the Shevach stop and the Gnai begin? And that's where Beit Aptinos and Beit Garmo get caught in between the two of them. Banda Mark, Sheri Koldorador, Balimnot, that over here it's coming to extol the shame of Koldorador, Al Kulan, Hu Omer. Therefore it says on all of them, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Zecher Tzadik Livracha, meaning that, including in this is Beit Aptinos, Beit Garmo, all those people that are listed in Yoma, they will be included under Zecher Tzadik Livracha, which is the term used in Yoma to describe those people that are on the positive list. Banda Mar, Misha Yaboto Dor, Mana ma shibidoro, whoever was the Tana in that time, listed out all the people. Akuan huomer. Then they could be included as Shem Rishayim Yirkav. So then the Shem Rishayim Yirkav will apply to these individuals, even possibly Beit Garmo and Beit Avtinus, because this mission does not opine on their qualifications and whether they were Kshirim. So then, Ama Ne'mar Zecher Tzadik Vracha. If you say that, the Beit Garmo and Beit Aptinos are not Zecher Tzadik Vracha, to what does it apply in the Mishnah and Yoma, that Zecher Tzadik Vracha, as a Ben Katin v'Chaveirav, that are mentioned in that Mishnah, that did things in the Mikdash that were positive. There are a number of items that are mentioned in the Mishnah and Yoma, additions and upgrades that were done to the Mikdash, that are viewed very positively. Over there, Ben Katin works on the Muchni. He helps the mechanism that was in the Kiyor that kept the water from being lina and brought it up. So he is praised over there for putting that into place. It also used to make a lot of noise that woke them up when they started the Kiyor in the morning. There was a addition or upgrade to the Mikdash that's positive. So over there, the Hilni Amalka and others that added on to the Mikdash that were viewed very positively. So that's where it says Zecher Tzadik Vracha. But the remainder of those names, like Beit Aptinos and Beit Garmo, do not go under that category of Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So again, this machloket over here, as to how you read the Mishnah, will influence how you view the breakup in the Mishnah and Yoma, because if it's Ksheri Goldovador, then Beit Aptinos and Beit Garmo do attain the Zecher Tzadik Livracha. If not, then you can explain the Mishnah that they're under Shem Yishreim Yirkav. The Zecher Tzadik Livracha goes on the other individuals mentioned in the Mishnah and Yoma. Amar Rabbi Yona, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, says, Ktiv, Pasuk says, Lachain achalek lo berabim, et atzumim yachalek shalal. Achalek lo berabim. I will divide it up in public. In the Yishayahu, it says that I will give him a part of the spoils in public, and he will divide amongst the great ones. Who does that refer to? Zeh Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva Shikin Midrash Halochot Vagadot. As Rabbi Akiva put together all the Midrashim, the Halochot and Agadot. In the Bavli, there is something that is similar to this, and this is probably what the Gemara is referencing over here, is that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva turn out to be the Stam everything. Rabbi Meir is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. He's Stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. He is Stam Sifro. So if you go through all the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they are the Stam authors of the different Midrashei Halakha, Midrashei Agadah, and Mishnayot, and Braidot. And so because of that, Rabbi Akiva is seen as the father of the Midrash Halachot and Agadot. That's probably the reference being made over here. That's what the Tiklin Chalitin says over here. Shrabim Ayu Talmidav. He has a lot of Talmidim that we know from the Gemara and Yivamot and in Ketubot about Rabbi Akiva's large following of Talmidim. And then Bekulu Stimtai, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. And he quotes what I mentioned from the Babli, which is all the Stumot according to Rabbi Akiva. Right. Ve'eshomrim, Elu Anshei Knesset Agdola. Tiknu. No, that was done by Anshei Knesset Agdola. Ama Tikein Zeh. So what did Rabbi Akiva do? He did Klalot Upratot. He did the Drasha. I've mentioned this before in Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva doesn't have as solid a Misora as everybody else. Rabbi Akiva starts to learn very late in life. He does have Rebbeim. And he does have a Misora, but you will see many times in a Mishnah that you'll have a quote from someone who says, I saw in the Mikdash, or I remember the da-da-da. And Rabbi Akiva will make an argument against them, a logical argument, or a drasha that undermines that. And so Rabbi Akiva, in a sense, is the king of the drasha of the Kolot to Pratot, making those drashot that using the blueprints that Chazal give us, the Shlosh Esrei Midot for Darshaning Psukim, the Rabbi Akiva is really the bearer of that flag, because that's his strength. His strength is as a Doresh versus someone who saw it or was there or had the Mesorah. So that's why he was the one who's Tikein Klalot Pratot. Amar Rabbi Abau, who's a third generation Amora in Eretz Israel, the Pasuk says, so it's describing over here in Divrei Yamim, these are the Mishpachot HaSofrim. So now what does it mean, Mishpachot Sofrim? Yoshvei Ya'avetz. Matal Malomar Sofrim. What does it mean that you're from a family of Sofrim? The Gemara is not saying Sofrim means from scribes. No, these aren't families of scribes. Rather, Ela Shasuat Torah Sfurot Sfurot. They put the Torah into numbers, that they created numerical systems for remembering the Torah or for categorizing the Torah. So Sofrim over here is not from scribe Sofer, but rather Lispor, to count. And now they're going to give you examples of Mishnayot and Braitot that have numbers in, which is Chamisha Lo Yitrumu Truma. Five people are disqualified from taking off Truma, which is the first Mishnah in Trumaot. Hey Dvarim Chayavim Bechala. Five grains that are Chayavim Bechala, the first Mishnah in Chala. Chamesh Yisner Nashim Potrot Tzaruteyem, beginning of Yevamot. 15 women exempt their co-wives from having to do Yibum. Shloshim Yishesh Kretot B'Torah. 36, the beginning of Masechet Kretot. There are 36 Kretot in the Torah. Shlosh Yisrei Davar Nemru B'Nevelat Ta'ov Tohor. 13 things are said about Nevelat Ta'ov Tohor, which is the first Mishnah in Taharot, which we also saw quoted in Chulin. Dalet Avot Nizikin, Arba Avot Nizikim, which is the first Mishnah in Bava Kamma, in the beginning of Nizikin. Avot Melacha, Arbaim Chaser Achat. The Avot Melacha are 39 from the second Shabbat, which is the second Mishnah in the seventh parak in Shabbat, but probably should have been the first Mishnah in Shabbat. So that's what the Sofrim is, that they categorized everything into numbers so that they were easily remembered, and also that topically they could be held together, that they would have information that was consolidated. And so that's what it means, Mishpachot Sofrim. Amar Rabbi Acha, which is probably the right gear, so over here is Amar Rabbi Acha, who is a third, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. Tiv. It says about Ezra. Now over here, it's important to see the whole Pasuk, which is, Ze Parshegen Hanishtivan, Eshunatana Melech Achar Tashasta, Lezra Kohen HaSofer. Sofer Divrei Mitzvot Hashem V'chukav Al Yisrael. So this is the decree or the scroll that was given by the king to Ezra. But then it says it's Ezra HaSofer. So he is, first of all, qualified. That's his description as a Sofer. But then it says Sofer Divrei Mitzvot Hashem V'chukav Al Yisrael. Again, it says Sofer. So the question or what's being midrash over here is the duplication of Sofer. Tiv Lezra Kohen Sofer. Now, Sofer is not about Ezra Kohen, not Sofer. That's not what he's asking about. He's asking about the next word in the puzzle, which is Sofer again. Shem Shaya Sofer B'Divrei Torah. Just like it was a Sofer in Divrei Torah, Kachia Sofer B'Divrei Chachamim. He was also a Sofer in Divrei Chachamim. So not only was he a scribe with regards to the Torah, or a Sofer, which was that he categorized the Torah, he also was a Sofer in Divrei Chachamim, similar to what we just said before, the Mishpachot HaSofrim in Torah Shebaal Peh. He was a Sofer in Divrei Torah, meaning Torah Shebichtav, but he's also a Sofer in Torah Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Chagai b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. So Rabbi Chagai, who is a third, fourth generation Amora, named Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, who we bumped into a number of times, the second, third generation Amora, says, Harishonim. Now basically they're going to go through here is the Sidura de Pat, making bread. Harshu, they plowed. Zaru, and they planted. Nichashu, kisichu, they weeded, they pruned. Idru, there means to hoe. Kitzru, they harvested. Imru, they piled them into piles. Dashu, they threshed them. Zaru, zorel aruach, means to winnow. Biruru, they did borer, they separated out. Tachanu, they milled it. Hirkidu, they sifted it. Lashu, they kneaded it. Kitfu, they basted it. Vafu, and they baked it. So meaning that they went through all the trouble to categorize, simplify, and consolidate Torah Shebal Peh. Vein lanu malecho. And we have nothing left to eat. Not meaning that they didn't do enough, but we are so impoverished in our Torah that even after all the efforts that they put in order to organize it and make it easier and to consolidate Torah Shebal Peh, we still don't have what to stand on. It's difficult for us, despite all the efforts of the previous generations. We still have difficulty with the Mishnah, difficulty with the Gemara. It's not easy for us. We don't have an easy way of explaining it, and therefore we're left almost empty-handed despite the fact that they work so hard about it. Rabbi Abba Bar Zmina, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, B'shem Rabbi Zu'ura, who we've seen many times, Rabbi Zeiro, is a third generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. In Havon Kadmain Malachin, this is something that we see in the Bible as well. If the earlier generations were angels, Anan B'nei Anash, then we are human beings. V'inavun b'nei anash, if they were human beings, the previous generations, anan chamarim, we're donkeys. I mean, that's what we call yuridat ha-dorot, that's what he's explaining over here. Now, Amar Rabbi Mano, this is Rabbi Mano Hasheni, who's a fifth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. He says that, b'ha'ishat, they said Amrin, at that moment they also said, afilu kechamrateid Rabbi Pinchas Bayir, lod minun. We're not even as good as the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. Now the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair is exceptional. We're going to see now a great story about the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. He's referenced in the Babli as well, as to being that the animals of Tzaddikim have a certain standards to them, that they keep halacha as well, not just the Tzaddikim, but even the animals of the Tzaddikim. So he makes the point here that when we talk about weird donkeys, we're not even like the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, not even like that donkey that is a tzaddik. We're like the low end of the donkey chain. So then, Chamartei to Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. So here's the story of the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. We also saw Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair in a Gemara that didn't belong in the Yushalmi with regards to the list of items, that's Rizut, Zehirut, and Tahara, and all those items, that list of what leads to what, the framework from Masilat Yesharim, we saw that earlier in the Yishalmi. That's also quoted in the name of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair. So now the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas Yair, Ganavta Listai Belilya. Marauders came at night, and they stole his donkey. Avat Tmira Gabon, Tlata Yomin, Velotai Maklum. So they made for him food, they presented him food for 3 days, didn't taste a thing. He hadn't eaten for 3 days. But their tlata yomin imlechun. So they regretted, or they decided it wasn't such a great idea to steal this donkey, because this donkey's going to starve to death anyway, and they're going to end up with a dead donkey on their hands instead of something valuable that they stole. Machzarte. They returned it. Amrei afkinun minhacha. Let's get him out of here. Delotemut gaban. So it doesn't die by us. So afkuna. So they threw it out, the donkey. Zalt v'kampla atara demara. He went back and went to the doorway, the gateway of his owner, and back to Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair's house. Shariat minakat. So he was braying, he was crawling out at the doorway. Samalom pitchun ada alufta titla tlat yomim delotama klum. So Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair says, open up for this poor donkey. This donkey is in a sad state because he hasn't eaten for 3 days. So Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair knew already that he hadn't eaten for 3 days. That's why he was calling out. So he says, open up the door for him. Pitrenla va'alato. So they opened it up, they brought him in. Amarlon, yavolu klum techo. Give him something to eat. Pinchas Ben Yair tells somebody in the household, give him something to eat. Yavon kuma silrim. They put in front of him barley. Vlo bon mechal. He refused to eat. So Amarle, Rabbi, lo bayit mechal. They said back to Rabbi Pinchas Yair, he doesn't want to eat. What do we do? I'm alone. Mitukanini nun? Were there trumot and masrot taken off of it? Is this not tevel? I'm alone. Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. It's mitukan. It has all the trumot, masrot. Everything is fine. It's good food to give him. So I'm alone. Varmintun demayan. Demayan is from demai, the word demai. Is this demai? Did you take off the trumot and masrot from demai? Demai is something that is produced that is safek, as to whether the trumot and masrot were removed from it because came from an Ama Aretz. So there we say that Misafek, you remove the Shmota and Masrot. There's a procedure for doing that. Samrnei Lochein Alfun Rabbi, didn't you teach us, Rabbi? Meaning Rabbi Pinchas here, didn't you teach us? Halukeach Zera LeBehema, Kemach LeOrot, Shemen LeOr Patur Min Admai. If you buy produce to give to the animals for animal feed, flour to use for the tanning of the skins, or oil for light, Patur Min Admai. Over there, the Chachamim did not force you to take off the Trumot Amma Asrot. Since the whole institution of Demai is Midirabanan, because Rov Amayaretz are Masrin, so we're Choshesh from Miut. The question is if it's a Miut or Matsui, or because it's just too risky given the fact that it involves Mita Bidei Shemayim. If it's not Mufrash, so Chachamim instituted that we made a Chumrah to take it off. But they only did that when you himself were eating it. But if you're using it for any ulterior reason, which is to give it as animal feed, to use it for, use it in the tanning process, or to use it for light, there they did not require you to remove the Trumot Masrot. So here you're done with the donkey. So we didn't remove it because it's Demai, but based on what you taught us, we don't have to remove it. What am I going to do with that poor donkey that she wants to be machmir on herself? I mean, that she is a machmir donkey and she won't eat Demai if it's not removed. You're right, that is the halacha, but this donkey wants to be machmir on itself. They removed the Demai, and sure enough, it ate. So here you have the donkey of Pinchas Ben Yair, who is an unusual donkey. The Gemara in many places asks, based on this, it says, in Behemot Tanshal Tzadikim, when it comes to Behemot Tzadikim, they're not Nichshal with regards to something that is Asur, then certainly Tzadikim cannot be Nichshal. The Gemara asks that question. If it's true by Behemot Tzadikim, then certainly a Tzadik can't be Nichshal. When there's a question about some Tzadik being Nichshal, how could it be that Hashem allows a Kishalon to happen to them? That the Gemara asks in some places. Tosafot in the Bavli qualifies that and says that it's a unique status with regards to achila. Since achila is something that you ingest and that you take in, and it's mashpia on the body, that's where Hashem protects the tzadikim as well as behemat tzadikim from eating something that is asur. It's not a general statement that tzadikim never sin or never trip up in something that's asur. It's particular to achila that Hashem would protect the tzaddik from eating something that's asur be'achila. So that's where Tosafot relegates this type of protection from Hashem to achila. All right, next. Petach yalekinim. Bore magadol hu kocho shel oto ish. Let's see how great this individual is. That's Mordechai. Shepoteach torim v'dorshan. That he's able to open up things and give a drasha to them. Yodea ba'ayin lashon, he knows the 70 languages. Tanyo, Sanhedrin sheyesh ba shnayim shechol daber. You have in a Sanhedrin two people that could speak the 70 languages. Kulan ruin lishmoa, and the other 69 understand the 70 languages. Karzir ruya le Sanhedrin. That is a good Sanhedrin. Gimel, if you have three people who can speak the 70 languages and the other 68 understand them, harizu benunit. That's kind of mid-range Sanhedrin. Dalid, if you have four people that can speak the 70 languages, that means that 67 of them understand them. Haizu chokhmah. That is the top-notch Sanhedrin. That's the peak of what you can have as a Sanhedrin. Over Yavna, you bo Dalid. And in Yavna, you have four people like this. Which is, and it's interesting here. It says Ben Azai. Ben Azai, we know, is the Talmud Chover of Rabbi Akiva. Uben Zoma. Uben Achinai. So it's interesting here, what you have here are three people who did not attain smicha. They're the three people who are the ones who are speaking the 70 Lishonot, and they're what are giving the name to this Sanhedrin, that it is a Sanhedrin of Chochmah. Here at least three people or three individuals who are not Nismach. Ben Azai, Shimon Ben Azai, who's a third generation Tana like Rabbi Akiva. Ben Zoma, who's also a third generation Amora. They're entering with Rabbi Akiva into the Pardes. Ben Achinai, who is Hananya ben Hachinai, who's also a third, fourth generation Tano. And then the way we have it in our Gemaras is Rabbi Elazar ben Matya, who's also a Tano in the Dor Shlishi. Some have an alternative Gersa, which is Hananya ben Hanilai. Question of whether he had the status of Rabbi or not also would make it then all four of them were not Musmachim. Amar Rav Chista, who we're familiar through from the Bavli, who's a second, third generation Amora in Bavel, Pamachat Yavsha Eretz Yisrael. There's a drought in Eretz Yisrael. V'lo yadum eichan avi omer. They couldn't bring the omer from anywhere because they need to bring it from, they want to bring it from Eretz Yisrael. The place is drought, there's nothing left, they can't bring it, there's no produce that they can bring for the omer. V'ava taman chadilein. There is one person who is mute. Tav yovid chadyadei al gagot. He put one hand on a roof, and he put one hand on a tzrif on a hut. Aitune kamei de ptachio. They brought him before Ptachya Mordechai. Amarlo, it atar dimitkarya gagot srifim. Is there a place that is called gagot srifim, otsrifim gagot? Aslin the Taman Vashkechan. They sure enough, they found a place called gagot srifim. They went over there and they found it. Srifim is a settlement that's on the coastline near Lod. So this is trying to give you examples of Ptachya's brilliance or ability to be doresh, things that other people cannot understand. I'm a Rabbi Yossi B'Ribi Bon, who is a fifth generation Amora we bumped into a lot here in the Masechta. Pamachat nishtaf kol olam kulo. The whole world was flooded. Now, whether it needs to be the whole world over here or Eretz Yisrael was flooded, that would have been enough. But Yodim eichan lavi Omer, and they didn't know where to bring the Omer from because of the flooding. Bavataman chadileim. Again, they have a mute person in front of them. Dava yoy v'yadea al enei. He put one of his hands on his eyes. V'yadea al sukra. And his other hand on Sukhra here, in the Bavli, we know in the Gemara in Shabbat, it's Sukhtonaita Dinizaita, which is a plug or a stopper. Over here, many of the Phrasim say Sukhra is the hinge, in the hole of the hinge of the door, or in the hole in the ground where you lock the door into. Whatever it is, we're talking about a hole or a stopper of sorts, and his other hand is on his eyes. I do know the Gabe Ptachya, the Benjamin for Ptachya, Marlon, it atar dimikaria in Sukher, o Sukher ayin. Is there a place that's called one of these names? Today there still is a place called Ein Socher. Mazlun Taman. And we went there, Ashkechan, and sure enough, they found produce for the Omer over there. And Ein Socher is in the Shomron, close by to Shechem. Again, another example of his brilliance. It seems that over here, how Omer is an addition that shouldn't be in here. And that actually, when it was Nishtaf Kolom Kolo, Yodim Mehechon Avi, that's where it stops. And what should be the Avi is Shtei Alechem. And that would be consistent with the way the Bavli reads it, because the Bavli has the two stories, being one story was for the Omer, and that was from Gagot Srifim, and the second story is about the Shtei Alecha, and that came from Ein Socher. What's interesting in the Bavli is that the Bavli said that these incidents took place during the civil war of the Hashmonaim, versus our Gemara, who says that it had to do with some natural disasters that happened at two separate times, that it came from Ein Socher and Gagot Srifim. What's more interesting is that if they really think it is at the time of the civil war of the Hashmonaim, then they're placing Mordechai at that same time, which would be even more interesting because that would make Purim very late versus what's more commonly believed, that Purim was a much earlier holiday rather than at the time of the civil war of the Hashmonaim. Here comes another story, which is Gimon Hashim Evid Kineem. Three women brought their birds to the Mikdash. Achat Omeret, one of them said, Li'inati. Chadomeret, li'mati. Chadomeret, li'zivati. That's what each one of them said. Zusho omeret li'inati. The one who said li'inati, sarin meimar, shofat, kimayan. The reason that she's bringing it, because she was a zava, and she was flowing like a spring. So I'm bringing this for the tarata ziva, because I was flowing like a spring. I'm alone. He said no. Baino sakanat. She was in danger. And therefore, she was bringing this as a korban todah. Now, it can't really be a todah, because a korban todah doesn't cover that, but she took a neder, which was common in their time, that if I recover from this illness, then I will bring a korban. And now she's fulfilling that neder, fulfill that promise that if she got better, she would bring it. Then, the next one said, Zusha merit limati, sarimimo shofat kiyam, that she was flowing like the ocean. Again, that she was bringing this for her ziva. I'm alone, biyama sakant. She was in danger on the ocean. She was a seafarer, and something went wrong on the ocean. And again, that danger, she promised that she would bring a korban of kinim if Hashem saved her from this situation. Right then, the last one, zusho merit the zivati. The one who said zivati, sarvan lemeimar, zava mamash. They thought she was a zava. Why wouldn't they think that? But he says, I'm alone, Zev Badi Tolit Binah. A wolf came to take her son and was saved. He said, if he's saved, then I'll give a korban todah. And now she's bringing up her korban as a thanks to Hashem. So what's interesting over here, a number of things are. Number one is, if you really think they are korban todah, it's interesting that they were bringing birds and not the real korban todah. That's why the alternative explanation makes more sense over here, which is that these were nidarim that they took at the time, that if they are saved from whatever danger, they would bring this korban. Then the second thing to note over here is that the woman here is bringing it on behalf of her son, which is not so clear that you can bring a korban todah on behalf of your son. Because in Bechin Gomel, which is equivalent to korban todah, the same qualifications for when you bench Gomel as when you bring a Korban Todah, that it has to be the individual themselves were in danger, and they're saying they benching Gomel or bringing the Todah on behalf of themselves. But what happens if you come to Shul and do it on behalf of your wife? That might not be possible, that you could do it on behalf of your wife, and that's many of the poskim believe, that you can't bench Gomel for your wife, and you cannot bench Gomel for your child. The child was in danger and saved from danger. If the child can bench Gomel, then good. If not, then the parent cannot bench Gomel for the child, according to many of the poskim. Because it has to be the one who was in danger and saved is the one who is giving the Todah, not on behalf of that individual. So over here again, if it was a Korban Todah, it's interesting that she's bringing on behalf of her son. Again, if it's a nether, it's much easier. She took a nether, that if her son's saved, this is what she's doing. She's fulfilling her nether. It's much easier to explain it in that way. All right, Ben Achia al Choli Me'ayim. Ben Achia was in charge of those that had these stomach ailments. Ayidei Shayu Agonim Alchim Yechefim Al Ritzpah. Because the Goyim used to work barefoot, I mean, that's one of the requirements in the Mikdash, that you don't have shoes on, they walk barefoot. They eat a lot of meat and drank water. They came to stomach ailments. It's interesting, right? It's interesting over here that the barefoot part of it was one of the contributing factors to their stomach ailments. But because of that, they had these stomach ailments. So he used to know which wines were good for the stomach. That which wines were good for the stomach in general, or for the intestines, and which wines were you could read it one of two ways. You could either read it as sam, which is samam of it, which is things that are poisonous or detrimental for your health. You could read it that way. Or others read samam over here as being, which are efficacious as medicinal in terms of wines, not just which wines are good for the stomach to help out on a general basis of regular drinking, but which ones are even medicinal in nature. So you can read it either way, either positive or negative, that the sam over here, because sam in the Gemara has both applications. Sam sometimes is positive, sometimes is negative. Okay, we'll stop over here.